Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewell, and him, Robbie Earle. Robbie, we start the day off with some breaking news. Breaking news, that's right.
Man, oh man.
Breaking news here on Friends from Work. Why don't you share?
Wow. So yeah, I guess what just about 48 hours ago, Ryan Reynolds popped up to implode the Marvel Twitterverse with not only the announcement and formal announcement, I should say, and release date for Deadpool 3, but also the announcement that Hugh Jackman will be returning in Deadpool 3, which will take place in the MCU, as we've said, as Wolverine. Holy cow.
Wow.
I mean, that's one of the bigger MCU announcements ever. Like, I don't, just in terms of the following that he's had as that character and the speculation around the X-Men and the MCU, like, that's a crazy one.
I have so many thoughts.
We haven't even gotten to talk about this.
Right. I love that, first of all, they followed up that video with another video, jokingly, but aware of the questions all of us are asking.
Right.
There's already a huge discussion about what does that mean for the movie Logan? Mm-hmm. Does that erase what he did there? I don't know if you saw that. So much so the director even responded.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And for those of you who don't know, he chimed in and just was like, hey, I don't care if it's multiverse, if it's a same version, if it's different version. It doesn't change the fact that that film exists. I still love it, and I'm really excited to see what they do, which is kind of the Friends from Work stance on a lot of this stuff, I guess. You know, it's like that movie isn't gone now.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people have pointed this out, but we've pointed this out over and over again. The X-Men continuity is so all over the place. And even if it weren't, I mean, it is a mess. And even if it weren't a mess, Logan has never been claimed as canon, even within that universe, because it doesn't really fit in any specific way with the others. And the timing doesn't really make sense. The memories that they have of how kind of things played out, like it, I don't think that's ever supposed to. I think I've even seen prior interviews with creators emphasizing that it's not as though the X-Men timeline, the X-Men movies that we watch, they all end in this very bleak future world that we see in Logan. I think the whole idea of that was just to have this kind of old man Logan adaptation and a very different style of film, which James Mangold did really, really well. But I just don't think that there's the one complaint that I guess I understand is that just from kind of a, not a plot point, but almost more spiritually letting that be the send-off for Hugh Jackman, I see where people are frustrated to kind of bring him back from that. But I think it's interesting And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I was thinking back to how I might have responded to this and how you might have responded to this a year or two ago. You know, back when WandaVision was out and we were speculating, especially after that Pietro reveal, and we were wondering if they were bringing in the X-Men that way and how many of the original cast members were coming in. And at the time, I think you and I were both kind of uncomfortable with that. And I find it fascinating how much I've shifted over the past couple of years, whether it's because of Multiverse of Madness or No Way Home. But all these concerns I had, I just don't really care that much anymore. Like, if it makes for a good story and a fun movie, and I think so far, you know, Feige and co have made these appearances into good stories and fun movies, then I'm fine with it. You know, I don't know. It's maybe as things have just gotten a little bit broader in scope in Phase 4, I'm just more forgiving of things and not holding on so tightly to this continuity thing that the Infinity Saga did. And maybe that's me being a hypocrite. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that if it's a sliding scale and we both were on the, let's say, the 1 out of 10 side as far as like, hey, keep the tightness, don't do this. You've maybe slid to 7 or 8, it sounds like, and I've slid to like a 5. Yeah. There was a massive discussion on our Slack about this the other day. You and I have both been really, really busy. So I got back to my Slack and I check it frequently. I mean, it's our Slack, for goodness sakes.
Right.
And even with checking it frequently, I missed 140 messages just in the What's New in the MCU thread.
Oh, wow.
Just about this stuff. And really, it was an argument from a couple listeners on one side of things. And then I think the majority of people on the other side of things. And that's just the discussion we've had for years on this podcast now. Maybe a year, I should say. I am okay with it. And I love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. He's one of those characters that fits so naturally. It would be hard to see somebody else. Like, all these fan castings of a younger Wolverine, I totally get it, but it's weird for me because I'm like, wait, no, it's Hugh Jackman.
Right.
That being said, I am also still a little bit in the camp of, you know, concerned about the tightness, and I know that I'm the crazy minority there. So I am very excited. I'll see what they do with it first before I freak out. But definitely, yeah, it's different than we were a year ago. It's kind of happening, and I feel like we're either just shifting our brains on it or not. Like, it's going to happen, right? That's what we said. So how are we going to handle it? I think I'm, like, overwhelmingly, people were incredibly excited about this. We got so many "let's freaking go" messages on all of our socials.
Right.
So I guess I'm saying, I don't think I've changed my mind as much as you, but I definitely have changed it a little bit. I'm very, very excited, but there is always still a little bit of me that is hesitant about the tightness and what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how did it hit you in the moment? Like, you saw that announcement. Was it something where you were like, holy cow, this is really fun? Or did you catch yourself being like, ah, I think I'm into this, but I don't know.
The second one, and here's why, and I'm ready for our audience to crush me. I need people to know that I love the MCU. That's why I started this podcast, because I fell in love with the MCU. I haven't seen Deadpool.
Right.
I'm not just a fan of all comic book stuff just because, like, I don't have a background with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really felt a strong desire to watch it. Obviously now I'll be watching it, and that'll be fun, I think, for you to take me through my first viewings of it. But I don't see that and go like, yes, let's go, because I don't even know, which is terrible. Yeah.
Well, see, and I feel like on that side of things, I've already kind of made peace with that just once we knew that Deadpool was coming over to the MCU, period. So that's why I feel like the announcement about Hugh Jackman, like, it was always, you know, those movies are, I believe, the highest grossing X-Men films ever, the 2 Deadpool movies.
Oh, really?
And they were never going to do a hard reset, right? I mean,
totally.
that character has a following. People, there is a population of people that are really, really into the version of that character that Ryan Reynolds and the team around him have created. So
and
I knew
Ryan
that,
Reynolds just in general.
Yeah, 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 true. And so I think I always knew that they were going to have to do some kind of hand-wavy, fourth-wall-breaking stuff to bring it over. And so I had already been slowly making peace with that because I do hear you there. I mean, we talking about the WandaVision era.
Well, look, and that's why I'm not anti it. I didn't say I was anti it.
No, for sure.
In the moment I didn't like freak out.
No, and I'm not saying you are. I just think that's why to me, I if anything, I had that feeling more back when they first announced it was coming over. Like that this would be a sequel to those first two.
We still don't know what the multiverse, how they're going to do it either.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we don't, I mean, we don't know. There are just a lot of questions. I mean, I think that She-Hulk is maybe instructive in that sense, you know, in the way that it's dealt with some of the Edward Norton recasting, and it'll be interesting to see how it deals with Daredevil. And I think that those things will be instructive, but I also think what's interesting just from a kind of logistical point of view is there have been some conversations over the last couple months, really since Ms. Marvel, about these contracts from the Fox X-Men era that apparently lock in the casting of certain characters until I think 2025. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
So whenever the mutant announcement came in Ms. Marvel, there were a lot of comments about, well, if they're going to start bringing mutants in, they may be contractually obligated to not recast any of the X-Men characters that were featured in the prior films. I don't know. I think that's mostly referring to the like post Days of, or post First Class Days of Future Past lineup. So I think that would include Hugh Jackman and some of the originals, but it's maybe mostly focused on the James McAvoy
crew. Like
James
McAvoy, you mean? Can't be recast?
I don't know. Yeah, and I don't think that's forever, but I think it's through 25. And a lot of people are looking at this as kind of evidence of that. Like, since they're locked in, potentially, you know, utilize that. Bring in the one character that people really like from that lineup.
Sure. And by the way, I should add that people love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, myself included, but when I told Annika this news, I was like, you need to go to Twitter and check out Ryan Reynolds' post here. And she did, like, it's excitement like I haven't heard in a while. I don't know why.
Oh,
she
wow.
just, like, loves Hugh Jackman. She didn't want anybody else to ever play that character, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think that makes me happy. Like, that makes me happier. I like that people feel that strongly about it. And if it's adding that much joy, I'm all in. I have this weird relationship with the X-Men where I feel like a lot of the movies aren't great and just don't pull me in, but I do get drawn to his character specifically. So of all the people that they're bringing over, I think it's the right call. Do you think that they will do this as a multiversal thing, that Deadpool and Logan were in a different universe and somehow they get pulled in from some events that we don't know yet, maybe from Ant-Man, let's say, and then it's a scene of them like in a different universe and all of a sudden, whoa, here we are. What the heck? Or do you think they'll be like, hey, they've been around this whole time?
I don't think it will be that they've been around in the MCU the whole time, just because even if you get away from the time travel stuff and all of the kind of global events that the X-Men movies have tackled, I just think it's incompatible with the way that the MCU has dealt with mutants. I mean, even with that one scene in Ms. Marvel, like and you don't know this yet, but even Deadpool just treats the existence of mutants as a given, treats the existence of a known X-Men team as a given. And so I think that it'll be some kind of folding in. Whether they firmly root it in the multiverse and create a way that could come in through some sort of, like you're saying, Ant-Man vehicle, or if they just kind of treat it really fourth wall-y and just tell us, hey, now it's in this universe. It used to not be. Deal with it. I think, I mean, it is interesting, even outside of the MCU, like the second Deadpool plays with some like time travel components. And
now, careful, I'm going to watch it still now.
No, I know. But you would know this from the trailers. So that's in and of itself kind of opening up the possibility of branching timelines and things like that. So I think that I could see where there would be some synergy there. But yeah, I think talking about being uncomfortable, the thing that would make me uncomfortable, like, you know, with Daredevil, I've said I would be very okay with them just saying all of this has taken place. Everything from the Netflix series has taken place in the MCU. And
easy story to do that with.
Yeah. And I know that that's not even a majority position among our own listeners, but I would kind of be happy with that. Here, I would not be happy with that. I think that that would be, that's the kind of thing that would break the storytelling that's been going on in the MCU. I don't think they'll do that, but it'll be interesting to see.
Do we know if contractually it's a different Foggy or Karen? Do we know that? Is that confirmed?
I did see the other day, and I think this is still in the rumor category, but maybe not. I'm sure someone will let me know. But I think I saw the other day that Eldon Hansen has been confirmed to return as Foggy. So I would imagine that if that's the case, that if at this point we now have three of the main characters from the other series, that they're not going to explicitly clash with that series.
Oh, I was going to say, think about if you're Karen or somebody else, like, you know, Deborah Ann Woll, who's like, everyone else gets brought back except your recast. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so now and at this point, if Foggy's there, it's got to also be Deborah Ann Woll as Karen. I would think
so. Otherwise, unless they just write out the Karen character.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. But then how far does that extend? You know, like if Elektra shows up, is it the same Elektra, right, et cetera?
Yeah, well, and like...
Although she can if it's the exact same story. Okay. Yeah, I see.
I mean, well, and also like Ben Urich, you know, in the comics has such a large role in Daredevil and also in Spider-Man at times. And I think one of the complaints people had was, as great as it was from a storytelling perspective to have Ben's story in the way it did, and it was such a great Fisk moment, I think a lot of people, myself included, felt the absence of Ben in subsequent seasons. And so I wonder with stuff like that, you know, do they try to retcon and recast? I think my final thought on this and on the whole like multiverse thing, I've found the Lord of the Rings series to be weirdly instructive on this as well, because I don't know if you've followed this, but the rights that Amazon purchased, interestingly, were not to the Silmarillion, this bulk of kind of pre-Lord of the Rings stuff. That people initially thought the series would be based on. They were actually just rights to the Lord of the Rings books and the appendices, which is where some of the stuff that they're drawing from comes from. But the creators have said that in purchasing those rights, they had to agree for one reason or another that it would not be set in the same timeline exactly as the films. So the show is not a prequel to the Lord of the Rings films. It's its own world and its own adaptation. However, the creators have also said that they were, you know, they recognize the following of the films and they respect what Jackson did. And so they have tried to create as much of a feel of continuity as they can. Therefore, they brought in Howard Shore to do the theme.
Wow.
They brought in some of the same costume designers, some of the same set designers. And it's so far, they just haven't done anything that conflicts with the world as set up in the movies. And I wonder if that's something that we start to see happen in the context of some of these kind of Marvel-adjacent universes merging into the MCU.
Mm. Here's my final thought. For me personally, I'm realizing, you know, I'm slow to adopt new things. I'm very protective of my old things. We've talked about that ad nauseum here. While a lot of times these announcements don't get me super hyped, they've so far handled it so well that I end up leaving way more hyped. So when I see that announcement from Ryan, I don't set the expectation super high. It doesn't do a lot for me. I'm not super jazzed. But just like when they talked about No Way Home was going to be with the other two Spider-Men, I was like, okay. But then as we got closer, I got ramped up for it. And then I left No Way Home being like, that was even better than you thought it would be.
Right.
It so far exceeded my expectations. And that has happened kind of time and time again. I've been nervous about some of the multiversal stuff, but then I thought that was handled well in Doctor Strange and in Loki. Like the finale of Loki, when it actually first starts, right. I was as jazzed as you can be for a show. So I'm just realizing I am a linear ramp. These announcements don't do it for me. But that doesn't mean by the time I get to the film, I might be super, super stoked. So I just got to kind of wait and see at this point.
No, that's a good observation. I will say my final thought there is if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the actual announcement, I thought that was very well done.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was funny. It was fun. And like you said, the follow-up video. So I would encourage anyone listening that hasn't seen that to go to Ryan Reynolds' Twitter. And check that out. Candace got a kick out of it, which Candace is fast becoming my barometer for what excites the average the MCU fan, but not Stan.
Thank you so much to everyone out there who's been listening. We're so grateful to have you on board and to have you listening along. Don't forget to check out our website, theffwpodcast.com, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, et cetera, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate it. And today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop. We've talked about them a lot. They're an incredible nerd merchandise company. And if you go to epicheroshop.com and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, you can save some money off your first order. Robbie, before we dive into She-Hulk episode 7, a little update on my trivia and an update on my rewatch because as we've talked about a lot, I'm so, so busy. You are so, so busy. So we are recording this first thing in the morning. We started pre 8 o'clock and I'm still traveling around. But in 2 weeks, when I'm finally back at my studio, basically for the rest of the year, I'm so excited to get into a few more of these things and to speed up my rewatch, to talk about some video stuff, to do some fun things with our audience. It's going to be really, really fun. But I watched Avengers and Thor Dark World this week. So in a lot of ways, you know, a really big part of this podcast, that's, you know, very near and dear to our hearts. Two kind of thoughts real quick and then trivia. We'll get into She-Hulk episode 7. One, I'm watching Avengers and I'm flirting with the idea that on the critic list, is this number one or two ahead of Iron Man or behind Iron Man? So I'm going back and forth thinking like, well, as just a film goes, I actually think there's less cheesiness in Iron Man than some of the Avengers stuff. And yet the Avengers has a much better developed villain story and way more compelling than Iron Man does. So I was going back and forth. And even though now that movie has a few things that are kind of goofy and wonky, I get to that end scene with, like, you know, Barton wearing his, like, dude broke sunglasses and they're getting their Lamborghinis and The Promise is playing by Alan Silvestri. And, like, I understand that it's totally just pulling at specific heartstrings and yet I'm so emotional still. Like 15 years later, I'm watching it going, like,
yeah.
It still gets me so ramped up when the council says, was that the plan all along? And Nick Fury says, every world knows it, still just gets me so pumped up. Like, I have chills now just describing it. Can't explain it. So that's number one so far on my preference list just because of that. I don't know why. I just, it's just still so fulfilling for my heart. My second thought was that, dude, I mean, when's the last time you watched Avengers? When's the last time you watched Thor, Avengers, and Thor Dark World? Like, that era.
So I watched Thor and Thor Dark World ahead of Love and Thunder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, and I it has not been that long since I watched Avengers because I rewatch it way too much because I just love it. I love it so much. Like, the further on I get, and it is so much nostalgia for sure, but the more, that's one that I love to revisit. So probably at least at some point this year.
We've talked about this before, but there is such a firm line of demarcation in my mind on the actor's performance. For Loki, the line happens between Thor and Avengers. He is not very good there, and then he is fantastic in the Avengers. It's almost instantaneous. But, dude, I kind of forgot that that line for me with Thor happens with Dark World.
Yep.
If you go back and watch Avengers, Thor is probably, this is not blasphemous, he might be the worst part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He feels still so out of place relative to how the other actors are settling into what they're trying to do. Like, compare him to Scarlet. Scarlet feels like she's already knowing exactly what she's doing in that film. Mm-hmm. It's like a very similar vibe to what she's going to carry on. Thor, it still is so... Shakespearean, even with the way Iron Man pokes fun of that. And then Dark World starts, and it's like instantaneously a better character. Yes, I get that Ragnarok is ultimately that line, but Dark World's like a whole new level for him, where even though he's doing a little more of the Shakespearean thing, he just gets it better. It's more natural. You have some more sincere moments, and you have some funny moments. It's not just all kind of one level, if that makes sense. It's not just bland.
Yeah. No, I agree, which I think is the reason why you and I still put Dark World ahead of Thor, or at least have, although we haven't heard your updated rankings, because
100%.
I think it just feels like he feels more settled in from an acting level, but I also just like the character more. Like, it's hard to explain because he's not funny in the way that he is post Ragnarok, obviously. And Ragnarok, you know, was a response to, at least in part, that Dark World, Age of Ultron era. But every time, I mean, even the first scene in Dark World when he shows up and fights the rock monster that's sort of the...
Korg?
Yeah, sort of Korg.
They're kind of chanting Korg. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, are they?
It's super strange.
Oh, that's funny.
Does Korg just mean maybe all of them? All of the Cronins, maybe, or it's like a chant that he stole.
Well, yeah, or they might. I mean, I'm sure that was probably the initial adaptation of that character from, you know. But anyway, that's another thing. But yeah, I even then, whenever he shows up and the whole like why is everything on fire line, and he kind of grins, it's just immediately he's more charismatic to me, and I'm just more invested in the character, despite the fact that there's not really any significant plot to that movie to be invested in, which is the wild thing.
The sincere moments is actually where it shined more.
Mm.
Seeing him struggle with not being with Jane is the first time we've seen him just actually show emotion and struggle with it.
Yeah.
Like the dinner scene, actually, when they're all feasting over their victory and he's just not present, and his conversation with Sif for the first time really like worked with me.
Right.
Where he's elsewhere. And, dude, here we go. Ready? Just to keep the podcast tradition going. This is not a bad movie.
Wow.
It's really not a bad movie. Even the plot is not as bad as we make fun. It's just not as bad as we make fun of it for. And I don't even say that I don't say it in a tongue-in-cheek way. Like, on my preference list, I think people are going to be shocked how much higher it is on my preference list. Than the critic list. And even the critic list, I think it's not the worst movie at all. And
yeah,
preference-wise, it's just such an easier watch than some of the other films.
Yeah.
Everything is an easy watch. Everything is better over Thor, except for the fact that the plot's a little far-fetched. But even the stuff that we make fun of is not as far-fetched, I don't think, anymore. But
yeah, I think...
I don't love that it's so... The stakes are so high, that it's galaxy-threatening. Right. I don't love that. That's like, come on.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it is funny. I remember vividly... the episode that we did in our rewatch on Thor the Dark World, which is still kind of one of my favorite friends from work moments.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, and I think about this now every time I rewatch it, that especially the section that starts with Loki being broken out of prison and all the interactions between him and Thor after that. Like that stuff
like narrating
is legitimately
his plan?
Good.
Yeah, he's like narrating his plan, but you're seeing it at the same time. It's so clever. It's really cool.
And the little Chris Evans cameo is always fun.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean.
The music is so good. That was my final thought, too, is that of all the trilogies, I don't even think it's very close. Thor has the best music.
Wow.
Of the original trilogies, it's I love all three films. The music.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think I've said something similar. It's an interesting case of what your preference is for a comic book movie, because there is, you know, like a lot of the push post Love and Thunder was not, we need more Dark World. It was we need more Kenneth Branagh Thor. And I think maybe that first one was for people that wanted a comic booky feeling thing, but still taking itself semi-seriously. That's what they liked about Thor, because so much of it is still goofy and kind of like, we've talked some about camp. There are elements of that there, more so than I would say in the Dark World, which is bringing in that Alan Taylor Game of Thronesy kind of vibe that's a little bit not nearly as gritty.
It's a little wittier too, though.
Yeah, well, Marcus McFeely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, which is a huge part of why I love that one so much, because I just enjoy the script. But yeah, I think it's like I like Dark World because it's an easier watch. It feels like a character I'm actually invested in, and it just feels like it fits in the MCU more for some reason. Like every time I watch it, I get more out of it. But I also understand why people feel like it's kind of bland. Like the same reasons I think that it actually it fits better and has a better rhythm, I think some people would point to as the reason why it's boring and doesn't do anything for the character compared to the first Thor.
But I love when the cops show up and they're like, back off, she's dangerous. And Thor just goes, so am I. And then boosh, Bifrost, you hear it's like, yes, let's go. Yeah. I'm into it, dude. I'm sorry. I love Thor Dark World so soon. I'm not playing it sarcastically anymore.
I also feel like you have come in the way that you're talking about this.
Sorry.
Yeah. You have come to a spot now. Several years in this podcast I don't think I ever knew. Like, I mean, when we were first having our infamous or infamous phone conversations that led to this podcast, I remember the day that I brought up, when's the last time you watched Thor the Dark World? And you were like, Robbie, no.
I'm laughing about, like, I'm almost borderline tears thinking about how much respect I'm losing with our audience when I can't get jazzed about Deadpool and Wolverine, but I get so excited that I'm like borderline tears about Thor Dark World. What the heck? It gets me so jazzed when he does the Bifrost traveling. I'm sorry.
I love it. What a day.
Okay, anyways, let me do my trivia as an update to last week. I really stumped people with the Incredible Hulk one. Almost nobody got it right. Everyone got the Thor one right, but nobody got the Incredible Hulk right until a friend of ours really recently from London. So I have to ship a shirt to London now. Oh, that costs more money. Joke's on me, but... this is a hard one, and this is why I thought this would be kind of different. The quote was... if you remember, go back to Incredible Hulk for a second. They're setting up these injections for a meal.
Right, right.
And the doctor says, you'll get two separate infusions. Then he says, one into the deep muscle and one into the bone marrow. That was the answer. But the follow-up line that I love is, he goes, the bone one's gonna hurt. And that's the quote I wanted you to get.
I
was watching the
movie
going, okay, this would be a fun trivia, something different, but why is he so excited about how bad the second one's going to hurt?
I know. I've always noticed that delivery. Is the actual line the bone one?
The bone ones are going to hurt.
Hilarious. I feel like I was correcting that in my mind to the second one's going to hurt, but the bone one is so much better.
Why is he excited about it? I don't understand that delivery.
Because he's an evil scientist, you know?
I guess. He's like, this one's going to hurt. So that's the answer to that one. And then the Thor trivia I said was, S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up and takes all of Jane's stuff, but Darcy's concerned about losing her...
iPod,
correct. A lot of people got that right, so good work. And now...
She just downloaded 30 new songs.
Yeah, exactly. That's the funny thing. I think it is 30, right? And a lot of people were like, didn't she download like 50,000 songs? I'm like, no. This is 12 years ago when you could only have like 115 songs on there or whatever. Okay, trivia time. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
First
new
up,
trivia.
The Avengers. Again, I'm going to go a little bit different. A quote. Okay, so Loki kind of gets turned in Germany by Captain America and Iron Man, and they get on the Quinjet and they're headed back to the helicarrier, right? It's nighttime. You remember this scene? And he's just sitting calmly in the back, and Tony and Steve are having a conversation in the front. This is before Thor shows up, and, you know, I'm not overly fond of what usually follows, et cetera. Some fun dialogue there. But they're talking, and it's the first time really Tony and Cap have talked. And Cap says, I don't like it. And then Tony responds and says, what? Loki just giving up so easily? Okay. But he doesn't say Loki. He gives him a nickname right there. What is the nickname he gives Loki? You know how he has all his quips and his one-liners?
Right.
What is the nickname right there that he calls Loki? What? Blank? Giving up so easily?
Oh, man. See, I know. I want to say reindeer games, but that's from the scene prior.
But don't answer either because I'm giving away a shirt. But yeah.
Oh, yep. I should know this.
And
one.
Like, you know, he calls Thor Point Break.
Right, right.
Later, he says he's a full tilt diva. Like, he's got all these things, but.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to think. I should be able to get that one. I'm going to see if I can get a shirt.
Trivia question number two. I think this one's a little bit easier. Thor, the Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
What burrow specifically does Erik Selvig discover the convergence is going to take place in? So they're in London, but what area specifically are they like, oh, this is where it's happening?
I do think I know that one.
There you go.
Wow, okay. These are good. You've done a good job.
It's been a fun thing for me to rewatch, to get back into the MCU, to have these two separate ranking lists, and to come up with one trivia question while I'm watching. All right, She-Hulk episode 7.
She-Hulk episode 7, titled The Retreat, is the final episode here directed by our friend Anu Valia. And this is the episode that was written by Zeb Wells, who I think I've brought up once I saw he was going to be on the show, because he is a major writer for Marvel Comics, and right now is writing the flagship title, The Amazing Spider-Man. I think he is one of the funnier writers in general. I like that aspect, but I also just like his sensibilities, and I think he can create an emotional moment. And I say that because I had totally forgotten this was his week, and I got it this morning to watch this episode with Candace, who, by the way, is following along in real time. Like I said, this is the first show that I think she's done that for.
Even at 7 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. So, and she was laughing and loving it at 7 a.m., which, by the way, makes it so much more fun for me than, you know, watching it silently with headphones on.
Well, and I had the exact opposite experience. I'm in a hotel by myself in Mississippi and watching it at 6:30 a.m. on my phone. I don't know. It just wasn't as effective this time because I wasn't watching with Annika and, you know, at nighttime. And
yeah, that's – see, I feel like that's – see, I feel like that's telling. But I forgot about it. I think maybe I had in the back of my mind he was writing episode 8 – and I turned to Candace probably 10 minutes in and said, wow, you know, already this is probably my favorite writing that we've gotten, just in terms of the dialogue and the rhythm of it, the banter. And she agreed. And then I saw the credits roll and saw Zev Wells' name. And I was like, wow, well, that makes sense because I obviously like his writing. So I was, spoiler alert, very happy with that aspect of this episode in particular. But I was also pretty happy with this episode. And to remind folks, not a ton happened. So I think it's important that the writing was great. We start off following up with Josh, who we speculated a lot about last week. This really great montage, I thought, set to a Haim song, and it was directed really well. And we see the early days of this relationship leading up to Jen and Josh hooking up and then her essentially being ghosted. Another thing that I thought was really well visualized, her kind of constantly waiting on the text. And even the way they show the conversation prior to her being ghosted, it's just such a realistic way of depicting that feeling of trying to figure out how things went from being so great to now you can't get this person to respond. Like, gives me, it triggers dating PTSD. but that all kind of culminates in this call that Jen gets from Blonsky's parole officer that his inhibitor has gone off for some reason. And so he's thinking he's turned into Abomination, asks her to come up primarily to be She-Hulk and kind of offer some protection. So she heads up with the parole officer to Blonsky's ranch, finds he has not turned into Abomination, but at least according to him, only triggered something because he hit the electric fence trying to catch his chicken that was trapped. His favorite chicken. We find out that he has created this whole retreat center as he had said he would. And so we see some of the folks that he's leading through therapy, which we get some more kind of fun D-list Marvel characters out of that, including Man-Bull, Elagula, Porcupine, Saracen, and Wrecker of the Wrecking Crew. So Jen, not able to get service, not able to hear back from Josh, who hasn't texted her back anyway, is finally convinced by Blonsky to enter into the therapy circle and has this actually kind of meaningful moment of realizing what she's been having to kind of dance around for so much of the show, which is that tension she feels between who She-Hulk is and who Jen is, and the fact that she's kind of weirdly become jealous of herself. After that resolution, she leaves, and we find out that 3 days earlier, when Josh had ghosted her, he had in fact been, like we thought, working with Hulk King and had not only stolen Jen's blood, like we thought he would, but also copied all the data from her phone. And it leaves us on that cliffhanger with 2 episodes left.
I want to ask you a question there. A lot of people were debating this on Slack this morning. Mm-hmm. This is kind of grotesque. I'm not trying to be weird here. But did he actually already get the blood, like, during sex? Is that what that emoji was, that he had it already?
Oh, that's a good. So I did wonder, like,
people
wouldn't
were confused
that have,
if he was like kind of being like, I know how to get it, or I'm close, or did like he do it during intercourse and we just didn't see that? I'm serious though, like, because he did, because it doesn't show him grabbing. I'm not trying to be weird. It doesn't show him grabbing the blood
right
on the way out.
Well, my read my read of the text was that he had gotten it somehow.
That's what I
did. I did wonder through the episode what, because, you know, my, that was my assumption whenever he ghosted her, was that that's what had happened.
Yeah, his job was but finished, yeah.
But I kept thinking, wouldn't she wake up if she felt him, like, inject her with a syringe or something? And I guess I thought, well, maybe whoever he's working with has some way of extracting blood that would be...
Yeah, I'm not going here.
Undetectable or whatever. I don't know. But no, I mean, I
think it's, I figured more that it was happened when she was at a moment where she
figured it was when she was asleep that he, like,
then she
he
would
uses
wake
that
up. It's a needle.
I know, but maybe, I mean, I don't know.
Stop.
I don't know.
No, I'm not going here.
I mean, it's a valid question, but yeah.
But he has the blood. Yes.
That's my take. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they didn't show a vial of blood. I thought it was an effective way in just that one shot of him texting to show both that that is what he was after and that he is working with whoever Holt King is.
Dang, Josh. What an absolute piece. I mean, she just worked through all this stuff, and now she's going to find out that the one guy she thought that liked her as Jen still right didn't.
Dude, also, what a creep taking the picture of her in yeah bed. Like, it's a bummer because Candace was very team Josh and really wanted him to not be bad. But
yeah, I know.
I mean, obviously the stealing her phone data and her blood is probably the biggest infraction there. But mm-hmm just the little skeezy, I'm going to take a picture of her asleep in bed without a shirt on is pretty, pretty gross.
I think between that being what we predicted and being a little obvious and because the episode didn't really have an A and B story.
Mm,
remember how yeah so many of these episodes have had two different things that kind of connect yeah at the end. This one's been pretty much just she went to the retreat. I thought the writing was fantastic, but the rest of the episode wasn't as much for me. It wasn't poorly done. It's just, like you said last week, some you prefer more than others. This totally one was not my favorite as far. It just felt like we weren't moving very many places. But I really do love that Emil is actually running a retreat and actually uh-huh counseling people, like, helpfully.
Yeah.
Actually.
I love – so I think what I liked about this from a macro She-Hulk perspective is what it did with the seeds that they planted in those Blonsky episodes earlier, because I remember people saying that the whole, you know, enlightened villain thing was a little cliche when they first did it. I didn't necessarily feel that way, but I think I saw where people were coming from. And, you know, in those early episodes, there were some funny moments, but that wasn't like the funniest thing that She-Hulk has done so far.
Sure.
And so had it just ended there, I would have been like, oh, yeah, I mean, it was a fun way to bring him back. But having them actually play that out and what that allows them to do with these scenes, with these villains like Man-Bull, I thought made that setup so much more worthwhile. And it gave us yet another twist, because they came up, and even in that opening scene, and maybe this will still be the case, with Blonsky, I was like, he's acting a little bit less.
Like, you're kind of waiting for him to turn. Like, all of a sudden, he's going to have a bad side. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, like, when he actually sits down and counsels everyone and they're actually making really good progress.
Right. Right. It was like, okay, like, I love that they got me again to think, oh, maybe he was tricking us and he really is evil and not. So, I by the way, I loved all of the quotes that were up around the compound from Blonsky. So it was like, it's his own place. But like all of the lines he had, the way he interacted with these guys, even whenever he was kind of in a more exasperated spot. It was all just hilarious. And the like the intro with Manbull and the line like freaky lab accident, don't ask. The whole like I am not a matador. I did do some light matadoring in college. No,
oh, I knew it. Swashbuckler.
Like Spanish is not an ethnicity, it's a language. Have you heard of the country Spain? It was just like I laughed probably more this episode than I have any other, even though I recognize that, you know, from like a plot perspective, less happened. Just the screenplay I thought was phenomenal here.
I would like to watch it again with Annika next week because I bet I'll laugh even more than, like you said, the environment matters, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I also love the bringing back the Wrecking Crew guy, which, you know, I thought was another interesting way of sort of subverting, at least in the moment, our expectations and making the ending less predictable because, you know, I had thought with them focusing back on the Wrecking Crew thing, and I said this last week, that Josh was a member of that, that he was maybe the guy with the ski mask on. And that may or may not have been the case. I think we probably would have gotten that reveal now if that were the case. But whenever we saw someone show up from the Wrecking Crew, I was like, okay, well, maybe
it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was trying to figure out what the connection was. If that was another nefarious thing, if he was sent there intentionally, if maybe Jen had been lured there intentionally by Blonsky. And so my mind was racing, trying to figure out what that reveal was, such that whenever they did give us the 3 days earlier thing, I had kind of forgotten about that piece of it. Just the.
And I wonder if there's more there though, because he was trying to get her blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not long ago. And maybe he's fully converted because of Blonsky, but then he would have some things to tell Jen, right? As a heads up.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I mean, and that's, I'm so curious how some of that stuff, like even some of the stuff we talked about last week with the wedding and how Josh knew to go to the wedding and, mm-hmm. and how, you know, Holt King had surveillance set up in that way.
Well, somebody's pulling the strings, yeah.
But, you know, like, was that just they found out she was going to be at that wedding and Titania also happened to be at that wedding and that was all coincidence?
No, Titania is also hired, I think.
Yeah.
Like I mean, Josh. Titania is the same role as Josh-ish.
Okay, you think they're reporting to the same?
Yeah, I
Holt
think.
King? Yeah. I think that's probably true.
Regarding Josh, do you think it could have been done where he actually was genuinely just good? I'm trying to process if that would have been more effective for me or how they would have pulled that off.
I think they could have. And I think I probably would have appreciated them doing the less predictable thing. But like I said, I think the way they executed it here made it a little bit less predictable to me. So I was okay with it.
I think what they're going to do, and I think what I'm going to really appreciate and what's going to be really cool, this is all prediction, but I think they're going to end up using this as a really healing moment for Jen in realizing that she doesn't need the approval of another guy or somebody else to still be self-confident and have that wholeness. Mm-hmm. And so by having Josh still be bad, it's not going to be a crushing blow to her because she's fully realizing her own self-worth without Josh. Without any guy.
And I kind of appreciated that. Like, one thing I was worried about as the episode was ending, if Josh had been good, then I was going to be like, oh man, like she just went through all this to like delete his number and cut him out. And if in fact he has just been, you know, like kidnapped or something, then that would kind of undo some of that realization.
Yeah, but also realizing that you wouldn't have as powerful of a moment potentially if she only got that confidence once she met the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That being said, I still would like her to be happy in certain scenarios. So hopefully there's still a way to do it. And maybe Matthew Murdock plays a role in that now. That's what's weird. It's like now that kind of took Josh off the table.
Right. Well, and that's another point I wanted to make is I I was always wondering if that line that we got from the mid-season trailer was actually a red herring, and that it wasn't about Matthew. Like, you know, they're showing Daredevil, but maybe they just edited it in such a way to make us think she's talking about Murdoch, but she's not. But now I think even if that line itself doesn't make it in, which happens sometimes, I think they have set it up for her to kind of find, get her own self-realization, to your point, and then meet Matt, not needing that from him. Like, she's not now needing Matt to save her in some way. She's coming to Matt from a better, healthier spot. And in that way, I feel like this episode is actually kind of important.
And you wonder if that line that Matthew said is actually maybe the send-off to the show.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not pre a fight with Matt, but maybe after they go through all that, they're like reflecting on what happened, and he's about to leave her and go back to Hell's Kitchen. And he says, like, just remember, like, you can help when blah, blah, and, you know, maybe.
No, that's a good point. I mean, it's just, it's making me extra excited to see how he fits in, which I think I was not expecting to see him here, because I had seen some things online about him being more in episode 8 and or maybe 9. But were you expecting him? Were you disappointed to not get any Daredevil time?
No, I was not disappointed. I was not expecting him only because I saw the previously on that they were highlighting. And
oh, yeah.
Like, you know, they released those a couple days in advance.
Right.
And the promo seemed to be more about this retreat and not about anything that Matthew would be a part of. By the way, Greg said this on Slack, and I'm not 100% sure it's true. I think it is. I didn't catch this, but he said that the tow truck was from Slot Towing, and the driver's name was Dan.
Yeah.
The driver's name was Dan.
That's kind of cool. Oh, man, that's awesome.
Thought you'd like that. If that's true, I love that kind of stuff.
Man, people find that stuff so quickly.
Yeah.
I also wanted to call attention to something that was in the previously on from last week's episode that I don't think we discussed. And that's when Jen is drunk at the wedding and trying to call Bruce.
And he's obviously gone. He's off world. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And a couple things about that. One, you know, we had Douglas Wolk on the show at one point to talk about the way that Marvel Comics is always really loath to commit to any particular timeline. They'll always use comments like weeks later, months later, a long time ago, so that they don't have to, you know, get overly locked in. And so I thought the line from Jen when she's like, it's been weeks or days or months or whatever since we talked was funny, again, on like the fourth wall level.
Yeah, okay.
But also, yeah, I just thought it was interesting that they made a point to follow up with that there. Because I think that I had sort of seen that moment of Bruce going off in the spaceship as, you know, kind of the end of the Bruce connection for She-Hulk, and that setting up whatever next Bruce project might come. But now it makes me wonder if we are going to get a little bit more on that before the series is over.
Do you think? That's what I was going to ask.
I mean, it would make an excellent post-credit scene.
I think we won't see him again, but there'll be another reference for sure, I think. Like, oh, why isn't Bruce here at this moment? Or, I don't know, something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's so interesting, the comments that Ruffalo made about seeing how they could do another Hulk project. And I'm curious if any part of that was him Andrew Garfielding us, or if you know he that what there is no additional follow up because there is nothing currently in place at all, and that's why, like, I think what I've loved so much about the show is I have these questions that I am curious to get answers to, but I'm almost just curious to see what the show does with it. It's not in a way that is driving the whole bus for me, or is even that, like, if some of these, like, if we don't get any follow-up on Bruce, I'm not going to be bummed. It's not going to be something that ruins the show in any way. But it's like they have created these little questions that so far I think they've actually done a good job of kind of coming back to here and there. And I think it's just been a really great balance specifically for this sort of genre. And it's just, it's one more reason for me to note now. I mean, we're 7 episodes in to this 9 episode season. And I am just so impressed with the consistency here, with the balancing of tones, the way that they've handled the comedy, the way that they've integrated these various characters and plot lines. And yeah, I am, again, you know, knock on wood, because we've got 2 more episodes. But man, I'm really, really a fan of this one, as much as I have been of any Disney Plus show so far, I think.
And so your grade for this episode would be?
My grade is going to be a let's freaking go.
Wow.
I had so much fun watching it. And again, that could be influenced by my environment watching it with Candace. But yeah, I mean, if we got just endless amounts of this Zeb Wells, a new Valia She-Hulk combo, I think I would be pretty happy camper. What about you?
So I want to follow up on everything you just said. I think we're in total agreeance here in that this show has just become a really fun joy in my life. One of our listeners, Ida on Slack, said it, I think, kind of perfectly for me. It's never going to reach the highest highs of certain shows, but it's a comfort watch, like slipping into well-worn slippers. Episode like this week's is not something that you often see, and it's just so precious to be told that you are valid and your feelings matter. And I think that's what it is. It's like, I don't put it on thinking I'm going to get those things that you're talking about, those answers to questions, or like that it's going to revolve around some revolutionary thing.
Right.
But we got a message asking us to be more critical. And this person was frustrated at this show by the power levels thing. Like, how can Jen, if she's as strong as Hulk, punch someone in the head and have him not get knocked out? And the CGI again. To which I would say, okay, first of all, we both just are genuinely enjoying the show. I think when you get to the end of this, you're going to be surprised at how high it ranks in my Disney Plus rankings. So I'm just loving it in general. It's not that I'm not trying to be critical. It's that I don't have things to be critical about. Regarding the CGI, I feel like we've brought up when it has been a little less effective. It's not the best CGI ever, but because the show's a comedy, it doesn't pull me out very often because, in fact, I think the most I get pulled out is in the action sequences from her. And that's where, to your point, you've brought up weeks ago, like, you would love to see a She-Hulk film budget, a She-Hulk movie for those fighting scenes. Because, yeah, it doesn't feel as natural as the Hulk in the Avengers, for example, yet. But I think it can get there. And this show is steering away from that because it's not about that. So it isn't the best CGI, but it hasn't bothered me enough to really ruin the show.
Well, and I think one thing you brought up early on is that, I mean, the CGI is the CGI, right? And it's the same. Everyone's referring specifically to the She-Hulk character CGI. And I don't know that there's a ton of benefit of us every single episode weighing in on that same animation.
Sure.
You know, which does not mean we're saying that it's always great. I just, at some point, there's not much more to say on that.
And admittedly, I haven't been thrown off by the power levels. I don't think they've made her abnormally strong. And I don't think there's any indication that every time she punches, it's at 110% to kill the person.
Right.
So is it not believable to say, like, when she's being attacked, she's just throwing the guy off, but she's not like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to break his neck? Do I think she could rip his head off? Yeah. But she's maybe not trying to do that.
Well, and she has control, right? Like, to your point. And so I think about it more the comics have always been huge on Spider-Man in particular pulling punches, because obviously, you know, Spider-Man's not as strong as the Hulk, but we also see him, you know, lift cars and stuff. And so I think you can make the same argument whenever you see him going around and webbing up people. You know, why doesn't he punch people's heads off whenever he's fighting them? And the idea is he's intentionally kind of controlling the amount of strength that he utilizes. So that's how I've been viewing this.
And I think just in general, it's an interesting point, though, because I'm watching this show for such a different reason. Like, my power level radar is not even really, like, up. It's not going off because I'm not even really watching the show for power levels. And I'm not watching it for CGI. You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching for a breezy, joyful comedy with a bunch of Easter eggs. Like, get why you're saying that. But, like, not even where I'm at headspace-wise. And so all that to say, I'm just really, really enjoying it. On a specific episode level, I was a little bit bummed that there wasn't more plot, right? Like, there wasn't two stories like I talked about.
Right.
And maybe I was wondering if the Josh thing was a little bit predictable. So for me, for those reasons, Shark Tank, I'm out. And for me, this episode is a let's go.
Okay, nice. Very fair. And one more comment, just based on some messages that we've gotten about She-Hulk and how much we've loved it. Sometimes I feel like people have this idea that as we've gotten the chance to work more with folks at Disney, that it's helpful for us to review things more positively to keep those relationships going. And I just want to clarify, that is not at all the case. There have been projects that we have not loved on the show that we have gotten the chance to talk with folks associated with, as have a lot of other podcast hosts and media journalists. So I don't want people to ever think that we have some hidden agenda or any other reason to enjoy something or to review it positively other than the fact that we like it, which I think is also evidenced by the fact that we have been critical of a lot of other things very recently, even this year. And, you know, that's a testament to Marvel's done some stuff really, really well recently and some stuff not as well. But it just so happens that you and I both think that She-Hulk is very much in that former category.
It's funny. We were just reflecting on this the other day that it seems really weird that some of the projects that we had lower on our lists are actually some of our favorite interviews ever. Like, you and I both don't have the Eternals ranked very high, but if I asked you with a gun to your head right now, what was your favorite interview? The Fearpos interview was maybe one of our favorites ever.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
We've had that a couple times too. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Anjali Bamani was really, really, really fun for me, even though there were parts of Ms. Marvel that I didn't like as much.
Yeah. Well, and What If is the show that I think you and I talk about the least, think about the least, but we've loved getting to know A.C. Bradley. And
yeah, that's true. She was one of our favorites. Yeah. We are not paid by Disney, although if they want to, we will take it. But
I could save a lot of money on steelbooks.
Yeah, that's true. I've
now got like my entire retirement in.
By the way, this is the most random thing ever, but now we're talking about Disney and we're off the rails here. I was just going to say, I saw a couple people debating how the interview process even worked with us on Slack. This is really random, but I just want to clarify something. Some of the interviews that we've gotten, guys, are because we reach out and we set the interview up via their representation, and it happens on our side of things. Like, we're running the Zoom or whatever we're using. Mm-hmm. At the time. And a lot of times on those interviews, it's Robbie and I and the guest, but then they have representation watching. And then as a courtesy, we'll notify our Disney rep to say, hey, we are interviewing one of your people. And sometimes Disney will have somebody sitting in there as well. But on those interviews, we have full access and reign to edit them, release them as soon as possible, whatever. So people were debating that because Disney doesn't have to clear it, quote unquote. We just, as a courtesy, let them know. But there are also what they call like media days for certain talent, where Disney, in promo of a show, will line up like 30 interviews in 15-minute slots for a writer or a director or an actor or whatever, and they just sit in front of a camera all day answering the same questions. And Disney runs that. It's actually a separate media company that runs it. And right. so sometimes the interviews are us jumping in on those. And then if that's the case, it's not that Disney has to approve it. It's that they have the actual files. And so they have like 30 they have to go through. So it takes some time. And then they'll send them to us. We could still release it when we want. I just didn't have them. So because a lot of people, that's so random. That just excluded like 95% of our audience. But people were debating about like, does Disney have to approve it? Because right. I made the comment, by the way, we don't have this interview yet. And they thought that meant... It's because right. like Disney's withholding it for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Disney does always pull out the, like whenever we use expletives and get really violent in the interviews.
yeah. But, we scream at them. they take that part out.
But, you know, they keep coming back, so it's fine. No, I'm glad you clarified that because I never thought about, yeah, people don't really understand how that process works. But
what a random tangent that nobody needs. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one needs to know.
The point being that when we say we've enjoyed She-Hulk, you can trust that we have enjoyed She-Hulk. But I am especially curious to hear folks' thoughts on this week's episode because, like we said, I think it really does come down to how much you like this writing, how much you like these kinds of comedic interactions over like moving the ball forward moments. So, yeah, let us know on socials. Join the Slack if you haven't yet. Reach out through our website at theffwpodcast.com and let us know what you thought of She-Hulk Episode 7 and what you're thinking about She-Hulk as a series in general.
Thanks, guys. There's going to be a lot coming up in the upcoming weeks. Just as a reminder, we still have two more episodes of She-Hulk to go, two of the bigger episodes, I'm assuming, and Werewolf by Night comes out soon, and so we will give our spoiler-free preview of that and or initial reactions. I'm not sure if we're going to break those out yet or whatever. But that's coming up. Plus, we've promised a lot of stuff over on Friends from Work Plus, which is our bonus content. And so lots coming out. Excited to get into all of it with you. And then, by the way, Robbie, just as a quick tidbit, once that's done, we're in Black Panther world, dude. Let's
oh yeah,
go.
We are, man. Which we're working on some fun things on that side as well.
No doubt. Thank you, guys. We love you all. We'll see you next week here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.